Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast. Jacqueline Novak has been doing stand-up comedy for nearly 20 years. But it wasn't until this past week that the entire comedy world finally took notice of how talented she truly is. There's a reason why John Mulaney has called Jacqueline the Muhammad Ali of comedy. It's evident in her astonishing new 90-minute special, Get On Your Knees, which took 6 long years to perfect and is now streaming on Netflix for the whole world to enjoy. Get On Your Knees is ostensibly about the blowjob, as Jacqueline puts it, as opposed to blowjobs more generally. But as we discuss on today's show, it's really about so much more than that. This deeply intellectual meditation on our basest sexual acts is not easy to describe. So before we get into this conversation, let's listen to a clip from Get On Your Knees, this one concerning a sexual position that Jacqueline prefers to call the hound's way.
I'm someone that, for example, prefers to call doggy style the hound's way. I think the position deserves a term with some gravitas. I think it's one of our more noble positions. I feel like any of these positions where you're staring into the eyes of your lover, you know, as if to become one, there's something immature there, I'm not impressed. To me, the hound's way, it represents a more mature kind of love where two lovers can look towards the future together. You know, it's not sad that I'm not looking at him, that I'm not making eye contact with him, because it's more like we're these two pioneers headed west. And I gotta keep my eye on that horizon, because these are tough times. But I'm a strong woman. I know Hubbin's got me from behind. I feel him bringing up the caboose. I just gotta put my face into the wind and keep on keeping on through this good night, because our young nation depends on it, that sort of thing.
Jacqueline, I'm very excited to have you here. I was realizing that we almost did this in June of 2019.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you are aware of that, but I had the pleasure of seeing an early version of Get On Your Knees at the Lyric Hyperion in June
Amazing.
Of 2019, which I really loved. And then we were going to talk for this podcast, which had, at that point, I think launched like a couple months before. Didn't happen for whatever reason, but I think it's even better that we're talking now because there's so much more to talk about. And now everyone can actually see this show on Netflix. And so, it was very exciting for me to see it so long ago and then and then see the finished product and really, I think it's, I love the show and it's obviously getting an incredible amount of attention and feedback over the last few days. So I thought maybe we could start there. I mean, what has this week been like for you? It's pretty insane.
The anxiety of putting the thing out on this bigger platform than a single room at a time, me staring at the people that I'm, you know, trying to convince or whatever, you know, that feeling, me not being present for people to take it in is like a loss of control. Not that I actually am controlling what's happening in people's minds while I'm in front of them, but it feels more like I am. And here I might be like, I just took a nap and like, oh God, like someone was taking it in without me there. So
yeah, a lot of people are taking it in without you there.
Yeah. It's a spiritual, it's a psychological, spiritual, like challenge or whatever. This like, you know, letting go of the thing and I'm not that, like, you know, that's separate from me, that's out in the world, all that stuff. You kind of hear this like thing and I don't know, you always hear these things like these artists, like, you know, it's theirs now or like, you know, and it's very appealing. So I've been I'm trying not to personally feel like I am a post on a platform that is just walking around like waiting for comments. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's no way to live. So instead, I'm really doubling down on like, my interior is my space, and all I have is my interior. And like, what is my life really about? And like, so I'm going over the top in terms of like, okay, this is a time to get really clear and journal and decide what I value. And
as opposed to doing what you could be doing, which is going online and reading everything
taking
in the feedback and the positive and the negative. And no, you don't do that.
No, I'm really trying to subscribe to sort of this, like, if a positive comment can lift me up, then a negative comment can lift me, or, you know, send me down. Right. So it's like,
you have to do neither.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to enjoy, I enjoy like these sort of local, responses, like, you know, a parent's friend texted through my parent. Like, I was like, yeah, that there's a really strong filter there.
You know? Yeah. Your parents aren't going to let anything get through that's going to bum you out.
Yeah. So I'm being very specific about what I take in, and because I'm fucking sensitive. So
this show has had such a journey, as we're saying, you know, from, I think it's now been almost 6 years since you really started working on it. Is that right?
I mean, yeah, probably. I am really bad with time. Like, I'm really bad with time, particularly years passing, because that's, you know, years passing is what wakes me in the night, you know?
Yeah.
So in general,
you try not to think about it too much.
Yeah. I try not to think about it too much. But in this case, a huge, you know, part of it has just been like really, really fun getting to do the show and tour it. And even though there were breaks and, we're in isolation and, you know, all these kind of staggered out experiences, like, a lot of it, you know, originally I was sort of looking to make it a comedy special, right? Like, I want to have a big hour, in my case more, but, special, and kind of like, I'm going to do whatever I can to do that. And that involved ultimately putting it on as a theater show, right? It started with like those shows, Edinburgh, and then the shows you saw, and, you know, just kind of wherever I can, and then doing it as a theater show. And then just all of a sudden that meant getting to do it so much. And then, oh, this is really fun. Like, oh my God, I could tour, like, you know, not huge venues, but a couple hundred people, I could get to show up, and, you know, in a city, it was like, this is the dream. So I just really lived it.
Yeah. I mean, it must have felt so different from sort of what you were doing before that point, when you were, you know, just kind of working out stand-up material that maybe didn't have such a focus or a theme. So how did it feel different from what you were doing before you decided that you wanted to do this?
Completely, completely different. I mean, I'm going to slip into all these cliches about, you know, all these cliches, and probably because they're these things that you kind of like tell yourself and are working through over the years of trying to, as we say, make it. Right? And I'm hesitating because like I hate when I'm like these cliches, so I hesitate and try to find my way through them that isn't the cliche, but I'll just say the fucking cliche and then we'll go from there and unpack it afterwards.
Yeah,
but
that sounds
but
good.
This sort of like almost like don't wait for them to give you the job you want kind of vibe, right? Like you just, they're like, you know, get up in the morning and write your screenplay as though you're being paid to do it, you know, even though you're not, right? And all of that. And so it was kind of this shift of, I am just going to throw everything I've got, you know, just go hard as though, I don't know. It's just like this, like, fuck it. Let's put it all together in this. And by all, I just mean like, me, you know, and because I knew it was like, I'm committing to this one project and I'm going to make this one project, you know, this 1 hour, this one thing. I'm going to give it everything I have. Right. And sort of, I'm not going to stop on this hour until this hour, you know, like I believe in it enough to then go essentially selling it, right? Like it's such an obvious thing, but instead of this kind of halfway meet like the marketplace or the industry or whatever, you know, all abstractions, but who cares? Like instead of sort of like meeting them halfway, like do you like me a little? You like me a little? Like,
yeah. Here, or wanting to be pursued or kind of wanting, yeah.
Yeah,
wanting
this
to
sort
like...
of weird, like expecting almost like, yeah, like the industry to collaborate in your like making it or something. And it wasn't like, I'm going to try to not, it wasn't like, I'm going to, like, I don't care about that. Like, I wanted all those, I want the things, right? Like, I want the big special on the big platform, like, totally. But I had to divorce it almost like, yes, I want those things. In order to get those things or to get that, what do I have to do? I'm going to have to sell it to them. Okay, what would that look like? Well, I better have something that I believe in enough to not be discouraged in the process of selling, you know? And that kind of made it really clear that then, all that's upon me is working on one thing until I believe in it so much that I would, instead of asking someone to believe in a potential, you know, which feels like what it so much can be, it's like, and then it didn't matter where I was performing it. I'd perform it anywhere in any context. It became very, it was like a real clarity kind of thing. But then getting to be able to tour it and stuff like that, like that was just so, even when there was this moment where it was like, okay, maybe we film it and whatever. It was like, wait, but I haven't gotten to, you know, like Detroit yet or whatever. I haven't done it for like a couple hundred people in Detroit yet. Like I'm almost scared. Like, well, one, if I film it, to me, it's like done, you know, unless I turn it into a musical or something, which, you know,
which everyone's
TBD.
Doing it, so yeah,
I know. I was like, I like put that in like literally years ago. I was like, can we just like put a little thing in the contract somewhere that just in case I decide, because I love musicals.
No, the vulva is beautiful, but it requires the kind of tilted gaze of a more poetic eye. Shall I step in? I mean, I'll give it a shot. To me, the vulva, my vulva perhaps, my vulva is beautiful in the way that a tattered flag is beautiful. It's frayed edges telling a tale of how ideals met actualities. To me, a vulva may be beautiful in the way a burger is beautiful. A burger with all its particular fixins, you know, wrapped up in crinkly, greasy, foiled paper. And then they cut it. I love when they wrap it up and then they cut it. And then they go, and then you see the layers of these different textures and they're pressed together. And yeah, there's a threat of a spill. Yeah, there's a risk of a sudden disassembly, but it holds. The vulva is the burger that holds.
There's something really interesting that you're saying that's almost counterintuitive, which is like you decided you really wanted to make it. But what could happen in that case is you try to like figure out what does the industry want? What it like, I'm going to cater to that. But it sounds like instead you said it has to be what I want. It has to be something that I believe in. And then you kind of have to just hope that your sheer will makes the industry accept it and take it, which in this case happened with Netflix, which is the biggest platform for comedy right now. So yeah, I'm not sure what the question is, but how did that happen?
No. Yeah. It's like, 'cause I mean, I wanted to, you know, make it right the whole time. Right. So it was almost like, and part of the reason I focus on this stuff versus, I don't know, almost, why this? I'm pushing this conversation into this spot if I am versus like, I don't know, more artistic or something. It's because it's such a core, huge sort of wound slash, I mean, it's part of it, right? Like if you want to do your work on this, on the biggest sort of stage you can, right? Like figuring out where you as an artist and that meet is like almost, you know, it's like its own work. It's its own complete, like, I don't want to say it's the hard part even. I don't know if that's like the simplification I'm looking for, but kind of, right? It's like, and so, yeah, it really was the, if I believe in it enough, truly, then I won't have any shame trying to sell it. Like the confidence that you're supposed to, like, you know, like this kind of negotiation vibe of like, you know, you have to, whatever it is, believe you nothing to lose. We can walk away from the negotiation, whatever, that thing. And it's like, so it became, yeah, it just became really simple. Yeah. Like in order to have that kind of confidence, in order to push, if I don't, fully believe in it, if I don't think it's, you know, done, or it's, or if I don't think I can say it's, you know, deserves to be, so then it deserves to be on the biggest platform or whatever, like, I'm not going to feel confident selling it. It's just like, I'm not going to push for it. I'm not going to any of that stuff. So it's just like, all right, it just puts it squarely back on me as a artist to do the work with whatever the work is without even worrying about how it appears from the outside, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should talk a little bit about the content of this show. You know, the sort of log line that's now all over the place is it's, you know, this 90-minute monologue about the blowjob. And I know it's very important to say the blowjob.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've gotten that message. Yeah. Do you like that as the sort of the framing of the show? Do you feel like it's too reductive? And, you know, because I think it is about a lot more than that. But that's sort of a hook that gets people in. So how did you kind of try to balance that?
I like the simplicity of it. I like saying 90 minutes is kind of, I'm like, okay, that embeds some of the vibe of like almost like verbosity and tedium and too much work and like not cheap. So like there is a little bit of a contrast in there that I'm into. I do, you know, I like that. I much prefer that to anything that's like penis or whatever. Cause like the extent to which I don't think of it, like I'm only, all my like jokes about the penis are all to serve. They're almost just like, I have to get through this. I have to explain these thoughts in order to talk about this other thing.
It fills with inspiration. And it is a filling to me. It is a filling to me much more than it is a erection. I think erection's a little architectural for what's happening there. I don't think anyone should go in that building. I don't think it's safe. It's not up to code. And then like a building, it doesn't topple, it withers. It dies on the vine.
I much prefer like 90-minute meditation on the blowjob or something like that to that. And then, you know, if it's like what part of the fun in theory of the show is that like we're saying it's this and then hopefully it's more over. I'm obsessed with things overflowing their containers like as a philosophy. So it's like I like it to be described as one thing and then kind of deliver more or something else. So it's like, I have to, for me to want the marketing to contain all that the show is, mm-hmm. would be like, then there'd be no need for the show, you know, like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's like, there'd be no need for the show if you could say it all in the thing. So in that way, I'm very like, yeah, let that be my big banner. And hopefully we, you know, get a hint. But describing stuff, summarizing stuff, like a little blurb.
It's difficult.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think the show, if anyone, you know, does just hear that, oh, it's a show about the blowjob, will be surprised and sort of that it, how much more there is to it and how, you know, it does really intellectualize this thing that doesn't usually get analyzed in that way. I know you've talked a little bit about how it's like anti-shock value in a way. It's not what we're used to seeing on the comedy stage from men or women, really, in terms of talking about sex. I'm wondering how much you thought about that sort of coming up as a younger comedian. There's this sort of weird double standard about female comedians talking about sex on stage, and is it something that you deliberately avoided for a while? Because I know looking at like your early late night sets, it's mostly about food. Yeah.
Yes.
Was that really conscious for you to be like, I'm not going to be a comedian who talks about sex in this way on stage?
Actually, no. Even though what you're saying, it became simpler for me instead of this kind of medley of all that is contained. Okay, my various because I certainly submitted late night sets that, you know, had all these different topics that included, you know, maybe a sexual joke or whatever. And ultimately, it became like easier for me to manage a 5-minute thing, just talking about one thing. You know what I mean? And also just like so there wouldn't be this thing in there that just confused matters. It was like there was like a to do the 5-minute form, there was again like a focusing elegance to just, you know, like, all right, I'm just gonna talk about fries or whatever.
Yeah, that was your Tonight Show set was only about fries, right?
Yes, and food is one of my like favorite topics.
So I want to talk to you guys about french fries for a few minutes, and I humbly request that you sort of settle into the topic because it will be filling the rest of my time here. So, I love fries, okay? Thank you. I love fries. What I don't love is the way people behave around them. I've noticed the tendency for people to go like this. They go, can I steal a few fries? Can I steal a couple fries? It's wrong. It's like, no. Excuse me. I had the courage when the waiter was here.
But early on, I was very aware of that thing that you're talking about, this kind of like, and I resented that idea that I would have to not talk about, I don't know, sex or something like that to avoid this kind of accusation of like leaning on that. So there was a thing in me that I didn't want to fall in and do the I'm going to show you by only talking about puzzles, you know, or whatever, right?
Yeah. Like,
it annoyed me, like, spiritually almost, like, if comedy is about whatever the fuck, you know, the human experience, like, I don't want to be, yeah, I don't want to, so I always had this, no, I'm going to do it, like, no, I'm going to do it, and you better be listening closely enough to realize that there's something interesting here, or human, or whatever, like, almost like if, you know, it, I mean, I think there's, you know, yeah, so I was sort of, it was sort of both, like, I didn't want to be reacting, like, I didn't want it to be this reaction, and I also, in myself, kind of, it was almost like on my inside, I was not thinking of myself as, you know, female comedian or something, but then also almost being forced to reckon with, like, no, that is part of what they're experiencing, and then I'm perceiving that they're experiencing that, and then I want to, like, you know, I want to dig and poke at that in this other way, and so I'm sort of like, it's, God, it's too, the dynamics at play in stand-up, like,
yeah,
forgetting
well,
even.
It did make me think, I wanted to ask you about your uniform or costume or however you want to describe it in the show. The New York Times review called it a, quote, passion killer ensemble. I feel like they were searching for another word there besides passion, but
yeah.
But couldn't use it
yeah,
in the New York Times.
Boner?
Yeah, that's what I was going. That's what I was going. Yeah.
I'm like what boner? Like I'm like a child. Okay, or like things that are like obvious like that. Like I really like miss sometimes. Like I don't know. I don't get jokes. Like I'll be like what? Yeah, that is like a kind of, that is like the perfect example of, that is me directly kind of playing into the tropes of stand-up. Like that is me going me wearing this sort of nothing outfit.
Yeah, it's basically jeans and a gray t-shirt for anyone who
and
hasn't
just
seen it. Yeah.
Ponytail, like just like get my hair out of my face for the purpose, because like
it's very utilitarian.
Yeah, utilitarian comfort. I want to like forget my body as much as I can to like deliver my ideas, right? And and when I'm like using my body as a, you know, as a to
yeah, to act out stuff.
I know, it's like I hesitated on the word act out. It was too like comedy, but yeah, like to act out. It's like it better be like this like relatively neutral like doll, you know, that I'm moving around to be this or that or whatever. There's two pieces to this. The first piece is, you know, fuck you, like like you can't accuse me of using my being a woman to get any points on stage, right? To get any help, to help the, like, I literally think there might be this, you know, whether however conscious perspective, like almost like, oh, like she's wearing a dress, like to give you something if the jokes aren't quite there or something like that. Like this, which of course to me is literally like completely not true, but it's the kind of thing that a certain kind of like identity or a certain kind of comedy fan might project. And so I'm trying to remove that.
Yeah.
They
Is that something
say,
that you ever feel like you did and kind of regret doing or?
No. I mean, I never, no. I have to determine to be so clear about this, what I'm saying. Like, I don't believe, like, I think a woman, like, I do not see that as a crutch, to be very clear. Like, it's harder. It's actually harder. So the second part of what I'm saying is it's actually harder. Like, I think it's harder to do it in a dress because the psychology of what I'm describing is so, like, I don't even, it's murky.
Yeah, it's complex.
It's like, I want to do it in a dress. I want to do it, like, I want to do it on all those things, right? That's why I feel like, in part, like, there's the kind of self-congratulatory defense, or not defense, or explanation of my costume, which is like, it's neutral, it's nothing, I'm here to get by on my ideas alone, right? Right? And then the kind of like cowardly version of it is the outfit, I fear, is almost a little bit too much like the equivalent of, I'm only going to do jokes about like Scrabble or something like that in order to prove to you that like I'm not getting by on my feminine charms. Like that's the twofoldness of it. But for a certain simplistic kind of mind, I am like, I'm wearing the same thing that like all these, I don't know, fucking dudes wear who you hold up as like doing real comedy or something.
Coming up, Jacqueline talks about how much her approach to comedy has changed since she started telling jokes about pizza and French fries on late night TV, and what it was like to watch some of her closest friends start making it big before she did.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're enjoying this episode and want to hear more, please make sure you are following The Last Laugh wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing to The Last Laugh, you can listen to our episodes with some of Jacqueline's closest collaborators, like Mike Birbiglia, Kate Berlant, John Early, and more, along with everything else from our free archive. And you'll be the first to hear new episodes when they drop every Wednesday. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review on Apple and Spotify to let us know how much you love the show and who you want to hear next. Now, back to Jacqueline Novak. It's thrilling, at least from the outside, to see it hitting in this big way and getting all this attention, because it is something, as you said, that you spent this much time doing and you were really determined to make it work. And I think it really has worked. What can you talk about sort of like where you were before that and why you felt like this was, you know, something that you needed to do? I mean, I'm curious because you sort of are in this certain, you know, comedy world with, you know, John Early and Kate Berlant and that whole crowd. And you went to, you know, this famous, you were part of this famous Georgetown improv group with John Mulaney and Nick Kroll. So was any element of this sort of like seeing people, you know, get their breaks before you and you know, wanting to sort of have your own moment and figuring out how to do that?
I mean, I've been doggedly, you know, trying since day one. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, I was sort of relaxed and like I wasn't triggered by anyone. Like, I mean, like triggered like a hair trigger. Like I wasn't like walking around spaced out and then go, hey, like, you know what I mean? Like
wait a minute.
That almost maybe makes it sound like cooler or something like that. Like I just finally got around to going for it. It's like I've been doing all the things that the sort of stand-up comedian pursuit and the late night sets and like all of the kind of in the comedy world things, right? Like just like, okay, this is me moving along in the comedy world and whatever and wanting to do it. So in other words, it's more like it's just taken this fucking long. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's like it's not like I've been doing this show since forever. It's like there was a definite this focus, this you know, that's the shift, right? The shift, in other words, the shift wasn't some external thing. It was all the parts just I always feel like I do feel like stand up is this, you know, potentially soul searching kind of like journey, like that, you know, begins like humbly just by, you know, like it has to, right? And depending on kind of what your goal is, like I don't know how to, like you were saying, like, you know, was it like, okay, let me see what the industry want, like wants and then like try to fulfill that or something. I wouldn't even know how to do that, you know, like.
And the industry is changing so constantly too that I'm not even sure anyone could do that.
Yeah. I don't even know. Like I was never at risk at sort of succeeding, but it feeling hollow or something. Like I didn't know, I don't know how to, it wasn't like some artistic, some.
You weren't going to sell out and succeed and feel shitty about it.
It'd almost be like, if I knew how to sell out, I would, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I would have long ago, like, I'm broke, you know what I mean? Like, so it was more like, I say that, I don't even know if that's truly like, yeah, I don't really know how to do that. You know, I tried to do things like submit packets to late night shows and monologue jokes and all that kind of stuff. And like, you know, shit didn't happen. So.
Yeah. Well, I guess that was sort of my point, is like, not whether it's not comparing yourself to other people or anything, but if this moment came out of some frustration on your part that you weren't, you know, that the way the comedy world was maybe set up was not allowing you to succeed in the way that you wanted to. Like maybe those 5-minute late night sets were not your form.
Totally.
And this
is. No, I mean, I wanted, like, you know, I wanted to be stalking the stage. Like I wanted to be like Chris Rock. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, that's what I watched and was like, that's what I want. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean, the problem with like, I guess maybe not the problem, but the context in which stand-up is, like, a given stand-up set is existing, right? Like, means something, right? So if you're on a show, if you're on a showcase show or even, like, a showcase show that's, like, a, like, televised, like, a thing, and, like, let's say you're one of six comedians and now it's your turn and you come out, like, you're inherently framed as one of the acts on the, like, on the night of whatever. And so to come out kind of with the bravado, like, you're the fucking thing, almost feels inappropriate, right? Like, it would feel inappropriate. So I, in that context, this is like an imaginary television show mom, but in that context, I would come out with a kind of like humility of like one of six and sort of like I've raised my hand in class and now it's like, you know, my turn. And,
yeah.
You know, I look around and acknowledge that others have spoken and, you know, that kind of vibe. You know, I also felt this way of if you're like a feature act, you know, like, or you're the MC or whatever, it's like, there's a vibe. Like it doesn't feel like you can go out as the feature act and kind of act like it's your room. So then... And then the late night set is like this weird advertisement. It almost helped me to think of it as like a short advertisement instead of, because you're not, you're a guest in the truest sense, right? Like you've been invited on to like sing your little song, right? And that context means something versus like, you know, when it's just your show and you, in my case, you know, hang a big fucking flag with my face on it, like... It's like, how do you, it's almost like, how do you act like you're the show when there's no context that is that, right? And the only way is to somehow just do it, whether or not, you know, whether it's, I mean, that's why it's great to just, I mean, that's why it's scary and great to just be like, I'm putting on a show and like, maybe like three people will come. It's like, if you're envisioning yourself, I don't know. Yeah. Just the contexts of kind of like these, the late night sets and whatever and all these kind of things. It's like, you're not in control in this one way, you know, and to me, like big fun part of stand up and to me, like in the form in which you're doing like an hour is that it's like your fucking night, you know?
Yeah. And we talked about control and how you like to be in control. I mean, so you know, I think you really manifested this thing, but your skill as a comedian and as a writer is what has made it successful. But how do you feel now that it is out there and it's, you know, it's done to a certain degree? How are you feeling?
I feel great relief that it's no longer in this state of like it's captured. You know, I feel like the version that's captured is the show, like is kind of like an accurate experience of the show to if there's going to be one version like that remains. I'm like that. Yep. That is the show. So that feels really good. Yeah. It feels a little like, wait, are we safe? Like, are we on land? You know, like this kind of like, okay, we're on land. Like it's done. Like this almost like a dream where you keep like thinking you've done the thing and then you realize you haven't or something like that. It's almost going on so long. So I'm like, it's out, right? Like we did it. Like I'm not going to wake up and like it's back on me. So there's massive relief that it's sort of out of my hands and that I feel like the thing that is out there is the show. And then just the way that, I mean, finishing projects is like, hard, you know, and really, and years of working on things like kind of independently, right? Like my like desk full of projects is a lot of, you know, things that are, they're only finished if I say they're finished, you know, which means like they're never finished. It's like, and so to finish a fucking project and just know absolutely it is done because it can't, there's nothing to do. Yeah,
in some ways this is, I mean, besides, I know you wrote a book as well and that has a similar feeling, but this is really like, it's, yeah, this is, you finish something and that's a big deal. But is it, and then the other side of it, is it daunting to now feel like you have to start a new thing or sort of have this open blank page after so many years?
It's really exciting. It's like, I've always wanted to get like into motion creatively in terms of not just like alone in my, you know, office, like whatever, like, you know, at my desk, whatever. Like I've always wanted to like, can I just get into the situation where I have something out, it's in communication with the world. Like, and now now it would make sense for me to be forced into another deadline, you know, like I'm so excited. Like, okay, like it feels like the gun's going off in like the best way to finally sort of clear like the basement of, I always think of myself as literally Belle's father in Beauty and the Beast. And like, he has all those, like, I don't know, in my, I've probably changed it in my mind. Like, but I have this image of him like with all these like half finished machines and gadgets and things. And it's like, clear the basement. Like, got one out. Okay. You know, like blow off the dust. Like, okay, is this, do I care about this? Now we're going to the, you know, and like deciding and clearing it out. Anyway, all to say, yeah, it feels like healthy. You know, it feels like, okay, like things are in motion.
So with the bit of time that we have left, I want to do our final segment called The First Laugh. So I'm going to run through some questions here, starting with the first piece of comedy that made you laugh really hard as a kid growing up.
There was a time where I was, my brother was sort of watching me and my parents were having like people over for dinner. So we would stay up in my parents' room, you know, like hide up there kind of. And my mom would like bring us like food or whatever. We had to stay up there. And I was like sick. I had a fever. And we heard this like outrageous fever, like, but cackling like they've never heard. And they came up and I was watching The Dice Man. Which I think,
and just,
like,
and it just worked for you.
I was like five or something. I mean, I was like, because you got to think about watching. He's doing the nursery rhymes, and it's like to know the reference to watch a stand-up comedian and know the references at five, like which you never know the references when you're watching the stand-up. So it was like, yeah, I know this Jack and Jill. I know this Jack and Jill thing he's talking about. So you're like getting reference humor slash like having this one thing that you're expecting the thing and it's upset. So it was like, it was almost a very core comedy.
Yeah.
That was pretty, yeah.
Did you stay a big Andrew Dice Clay fan for the rest
of
your life?
I haven't watched in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I'm not sure all of it's aged well, but he seems like a nice enough guy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, he was in something that was great, and I'm trying to remember what it was.
Yeah, Star is Born he was in. He was really good in that. He's done some good acting, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't revisited in some time.
What about the first time that you knew that you were funny, that you could make other people laugh?
Okay, let me feel that out. Like, still waiting, you know? Probably really was hunting around in the memory, and I'm like, vaguely recall, like, I had this bit I would do in class, like, for, like, other friends. It wasn't like whatever, but just this sort of early memory of like, okay, I guess that was me doing a bit where I would enact like what it would look like if, you know, I suddenly realized I was like nauseous, like basically like that I was going to throw up in class. And so it was sort of like, you know, it was like a real slow burn. So I'd do it for another friend, like, and it wasn't like a fake out. I was like, I'm going to do a joke where it looks like I'm going to, like, you know what I mean? It was like, I set it up. Here's my impression of, and then just like, and then doing like the slow, like something's not quite right. Like, oh God, is this real? And then like bolting to the bathroom was the final. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's decent.
Yeah.
If we were going to cut to a vignette.
Yeah. That's a good one. What about the very first time you performed stand-up comedy? What do you remember about it? What stands out? How did it go?
It went pretty well, relatively. I threw up before, speaking of vomit. It was a combo of like car sickness, but also I think sheer nerves. It was in Wiseacres, was the name of the club, in a hotel in Tyson's Corner, Virginia. And I went, and there was a real vibe of like, because it was a weekly open mic, and there was a real, like, it was almost like a scene in a movie, like, who are you, sweetheart? You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're okay. Like, a vibe. And I went up, I did a couple jokes, I got out of there. You know, genuinely shocked by how bright the lights are. Like, you know, like the classic thing of like, whoa, it's bright up here. And like, you just think people, you're like, how bright is it? But it's very fucking bright. That shit is in your eyes. And so I threw up before I got through it. Oh, I think I took a cigarette on stage. I can't remember if this was the first or the second time. They were very close, but I had like a lemon drop, like this, which I had never had, or this guy was drinking it. And I was like, should I have one of those? Like a little lemon drop shot. And then I think I had my papers with me, and like, I think I might have had, the cigarette was either the first or the second time, but I was just like, I wanted so much shit, like with me, between me and the audience, like as many, like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I gotta get video of that.
You needed business.
I think there's a video from
great.
It.
Yeah. Does that exist?
I think there's a video. There's a VHS in my parents', like in my childhood bedroom living there. If I have video of me with a cigarette on stage, indoors, that would be big, yeah.
That'll be in the documentary someday. Do you remember the first joke you told on stage that really worked and got a laugh and you felt like, okay?
Yeah, I mean, my first joke was like about getting my cat a pair of pants and not realizing that when you put a pair of pants on a cat, suddenly it becomes really obvious that the cat's not wearing a shirt. You know, then a series of tags, floating tags. And that was like my first joke / like, you know, yeah. Like
that was your
cat pants. And it's not a premise that others have not covered. At the time, it was very fresh, I'll say.
Pretty ahead of its time, yeah. And finally, do you have a story or memory from your career that makes you laugh now, but really was not funny when it happened?
Chris, can you think of a single funny thing that's ever happened to me in comedy that wasn't funny at the time, but now we laugh about? We're live. We're taping. I mean, I'm just joking that we're live. I literally can't think of an anecdote. What was horrible at the time? What was a horrible, maybe Edinburgh? I was trying to think of, I was like, those people leaving towards the end. That was fun. I can't think of anything.
Of what?
Yeah, because at Edinburgh, all the shows are like 60 minutes.
Oh.
That was sort of not funny, right?
The last time.
Yeah, that was sort of, we were pissed, right?
Yeah.
Or you were pissed. Oh, you didn't, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last time when I was just sort of passing through and doing like a couple shows, the show is long. No one, like, and the way that the doors are, the way it's set up in some of those rooms, it's like, so I'm like literally on my knees, you know, like screaming to the heavens, my like spiritual worldview, whatever. And people are like getting out to get to the next show and they're just streaming by me. I mean, and you know, it's like one of those where the floor is the stage.
Yeah.
And so they come down and they're just walking by.
There's nowhere to hide.
And my like tour manager, like she was like really, I think she was crying on the side. like she just like thought it was so fucked up. And it's not that fucked up. I mean, they had another show to get to.
That's how
it wasn't marketed appropriately.
Yeah, that's the challenge of the 90-minute show.
God, yeah. Yeah, now that they can watch it at home, there's no excuses.
You gotta stick with it to the end.
For the algorithm. It's really important, apparently. Completion rate, they say. And I'm like, holy shit, am I taking a gamble on that?
Completion rate could have been another title of the show.
I know. Every time I say it, I'm like, why? Why is this? Why must this be? It's actually like impossible to avoid innuendo because it's constant.
Especially when you're sort of
in
that mindset.
Like almost anything. Yeah, right. Then it just, the words, they're magnetized and you say them even faster. Yeah.
Jacqueline, I'm so glad that we finally got to do this. And in this really exciting moment for you and your career, and I've been watching you for a long time, and it's just been a thrill to see everything that's happened with this show.
Thank you. It really means the world. I really appreciate it.
All right. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jacqueline Novak as much as I did. If you just listened to all of that and haven't watched her new special, Get on Your Knees, yet, please take the time to check it out on Netflix now. To completion, of course. If you want to support The Last Laugh, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple and Spotify. We want as many people to hear this show as possible, and you can help by spreading the word and sharing it with your friends. You can find me on Threads at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram and Threads, where you can see photos and videos from all of our episodes and see who is coming up next week on the show. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Jesse Cannon. Our theme music is by Claude. You can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.